Hey everyone, this is Martin Willis with the Antique Auction Podcast, and I'm here with Phyllis, and we have a special phone guest today, David Rago from Lambertville, New Jersey. Hey David, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you doing there?
We're both doing pretty well here. Now, I've seen you on the road show, I've heard your name for years, and I used to associate your name with just arts and crafts, several years ago, but you're getting into all kinds of things. Why don't we talk about how you got your start? And I read somewhere you started at 16, kind of like I did, going to flea markets, things like that. Why don't we talk about that?
I did start. I was 16 years old. In fact, I remember my high school sweetheart drove me to my first flea market to sell at, and it was Robbers and Powell. And it was such a good experience, and I got to be my own boss, so I took to it. I'd been taking a flea market as a kid by my parents, so a lot of them were out here in the Lambertville area. Mm. So I started when I was 16 and began selling junk and local Trenton porcelain and moved into ceramics and eventually arts and crafts in the late 70s and modern in the late 80s.
Well, now, just for, I have no idea geographically, where is Lambertville?
Lambertville, New Jersey is on the Delaware River. It's about halfway between New York and Philadelphia.
Oh, okay.
So it's centrally located, and it's been an artist colony, Lambertville, New Hope. A lot of people know New Hope.
Oh, yes, New Hope.
Not Lambertville, even though they share a bridge. But New Hope was an artist colony starting in 1902, so it brought a fairly art-conscious group of painters and clients into the area.
Hmm.
In that way now for over a century.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever get any paintings from any of the Lambertville artists?
We do, actually, from the Bucks County School. We've sold a number of them. Continue to sell them. It's amazing what walks in here. We have a free walk-in appraisal day on Mondays between 1 and 4. And a couple of years ago, a woman walked in with a painting from a divorce settlement that she got for $10,000, and we sold it for $250,000
in
the Bucks County scene.
Mm. Wow, that was a lucky divorce.
Yeah, that worked out for it.
Yeah. Now, so you have appraisal clinic. Is that every single Monday?
Almost every Monday. The Mondays after auctions, we don't hold them.
Oh, mm-hmm. Sure.
Because the staff gets the day off.
Well,
right.
Nice.
I think you might as well, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I noticed you just had a very successful auction. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, we're trying things differently. I like to say we're an organic business. And what had happened with the modern auctions is they were the major ones were twice a year with 1,000 lots each.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had second-level sales we called Real Modern that had 500 or 600 lots each. And I just felt, especially in an economy that wasn't exactly booming, that putting over 3,000 pieces of modern on the market in 1 year, obviously not the only one doing this, was just too much.
Mm-hmm.
Put too much stress on the market. So my desire was to hold 300-500 lot auctions a year of modern material, focus on the things that people seem to want, and get them in actually friendlier prices. And that sale we had 2 weeks ago was the first of these, and the business plan so far seems to be working just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really hot today. Now, how do you think the arts and crafts, the craftsman market is today? Is it still, the good stuff is strong, is that right?
The good stuff is strong. There's several problems with the arts and crafts market. I mean, it's a mature market. I remember back in the day in the 70s trying to sell arts and crafts and art pottery. You go to an antique show with a room full of art pottery, the traditional dealers looked at you like you had three heads. They didn't get it. It took a couple decades to establish the arts and crafts as a viable American period of art, and viable and valuable and worthy. And so that's finally happened. The problem is that it attracts an older demographic.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the pieces that existed have been found and are in collections or in museum collections. So there's not a lot of new material coming to market either. I mean, it does come out, obviously, when Antiques Roadshow, we see pieces come up on a somewhat regular basis, but when you need 400 or 500 pieces to put an auction together 3 times a year, that quantity is more difficult to acquire. The folks who have it are dedicated collectors, so they're not letting it go.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of the people who want to sell pieces, feeling the market's not where it was a couple of years ago, are somewhat ambivalent about selling these things. So it's proven to be far more difficult. I mean, let me put it to you this way. American arts and crafts material was made roughly from about 1895 to about 1915. The best furniture was made by 4 or 5 companies. And so there's not that much stuff out there. And the other problem, too, with arts and crafts furniture is that the finishes are integral. They're a vital part
sure.
of the pieces. They mm-hmm. were deuced from within, not applied from without. So mm-hmm. you get the best piece of Gustav Stepney there is. If it doesn't have original finish, the advanced collectors don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so many difficulties finding the right material for us to grasp.
Right.
Honor is like from 1915 to yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And you're dealing with things not just made in America by four or five makers, but things that were made in America and France, Italy, Scandinavia, South mm. America,
mm.
and by organic handmade furniture makers like George Nakashima, and large factories like Knoll. There's so much modern material out there. It's
right.
an easier market to service.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Is that too long an answer?
No, no. That's good. In terms of your clientele for arts and crafts, is it more concentrated on either coast, or do you see more of your clientele coming out of a certain area of the United States?
Well, certainly most of the collectors are New York, San Francisco, and Los Angeles because mm-hmm. of the concentration of people there and the awareness of the arts. But we're selling it across the country. Somebody will buy a home in Montana, a second home in Montana, and mm-hmm. they're big sky country. They want rustic, manly furniture to decorate the place with. So we've sold arts and crafts area in Utah. Okay, mm-hmm. so we've got clients in Utah, Montana, Texas. I mean, it's a pretty broadly based market,
mm-hmm.
but it's not a happening market right now.
Right.
It's
sure.
happening in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah. Yes.
And what's happening right now is modern.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The problem, I think, with arts and crafts, and perhaps with design in general, is people tend to compartmentalize it. And what I've seen with modern buyers is a willingness to understand arts and crafts as not this aberrant 15-year period or 20-year period in America in the early 20th century, but part of a design continuum beginning with the Industrial Revolution and going through today to things that are one-offs and still being made by top designers, and that it has its place in that continuum. So the collecting mentality for arts and crafts
mm-hmm.
has been all along, well, you need only arts and crafts furniture, hardwood floors, drugget rugs, no curtains on the windows, green pots, and they make this interior, which is beautiful and very period-looking.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking there's people out there who would see a great Gustav Stickley table or a beautiful piece of Charles Ross and see it as fitting well into a modern interior. That's
mm-hmm.
what we're trying to do here.
Mm-hmm.
You mean like an eclectic mixture?
Yeah, and maybe not even quite so eclectic. Maybe one that just... To me, eclectic means that, and you're right, because up to this point, it's taken somebody who doesn't look at things the way the average collector looks at them, and I believe that's what you mean. Certainly, the people I know who've been doing this, some great eyes out there, have been mixing arts and crafts and contemporary for years, but
mm-hmm.
I'd like to make it so that it's less eclectic and more more easily digested and understood,
mm-hmm.
and this works great there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to collect things only from 1940 to 1960. Let's mix some things in there.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this. How are you obtaining, since modern, a lot of, like, say, contemporary designs and things like that, and I sort of asked this question of Richard Wright, too. How are you obtaining your knowledge in what we consider contemporary? What's good? What's hot?
Well, how do we determine what's contemporary? To a certain extent, when you hold an auction like Richard's or mine, we determine that by what we believe in, what we like, what we choose to represent, but also what we learn. The beautiful thing about the modern period is there's so much to learn about
mm-hmm.
it. There's so many new areas. If, for example, you want to move into early Italian modern furniture and you find that Christie's has a lock on that market or tends to get the bulk of it,
mm-hmm.
John Solo, our former partner, he decided to explore American organic, wood turnings,
mm-hmm.
contemporary glass, mm-hmm. contemporary ceramics. Those are areas that were not doing well at all at auction because nobody really made a commitment to them. So
mm-hmm.
you
right.
can really define what you are as an auction house through what you believe in and what you think is worthy. And in the process, you learn more about this, which is very exciting for someone like me. After 38 years, you
mm-hmm.
want to learn some new things.
Right.
And then you let the market tell you where it wants to be, because at auction, aren't many secrets. It's all happening at the Hammer, and it's usually broadcast live over the internet. We
mm-hmm.
all know at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. I know you sold a pair of Lewis Comfort Tiffany chairs.
Pretty sure they were Tiffany. We know they were high-end American aesthetic movement.
Mm-hmm.
This happened in our December estate sale. They came out of a basement in a suburb of Philadelphia. And they just came over in a dark basement. They were dirty, and they were just taken in. Mm-hmm. And then they got here, and we got a look at them and realized something was going on with these. So one of the things about being in business for as long as I have, aside from making me an older guy, is that I have a lot of contacts in terms of who we sell things to and who we get things from and who knows these things. We have a lot of academics that are longtime friends of ours.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So as fate would have it, one of the leading academics of American aesthetic movie furniture lives 7 miles from here.
Oh.
Wow.
So we hired her to come in, and she looked at the pieces and gave a report. And while she wouldn't say they were absolutely Tiffany, she wouldn't say they weren't, which is, as far as I could tell with academics, if they won't say it's not, then it probably is. If they want a photograph of it in the room it was made for, otherwise they're not believing it. So we then took a bunch of photographs, and we put them in the hands of the top collectors and dealers we knew in the country. And the rest is history. They started at, I think, $400 to $800 for the pair, and they sold for about $390,000.
That's not too bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. No,
I remember you setting some records on art pottery a number of years ago. Do you still deal a lot in art pottery?
That's my primary specialty, American ceramics. And for the sake of our audience here, art pottery more specifically refers to ceramics from about 1875 to about 1915. After that, it became studio ceramics, then industrial ceramics, and the art potteries, by and large, were driven out of business by World War One, and the few that survived were mostly driven out by the Depression, and the one or two that lasted through that were driven out by World War Two.
Mm-hmm.
So art pottery is my primary specialty, and there's not that much of it out there, frankly, of great merit that's not already been absorbed into collections. But because I was selling to some of these folks with these great collections when I was a teenager, and they kind of grow up with me, they know who I am, and when they want to sell things, they contact me.
Mm-hmm.
One piece in particular, which might be the one you're referring to, was a piece that a client of ours bought in 93 for $30,000. It was not ours. It belonged to a friend of mine, and I helped with the sale just because they were both friends of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And he bought it for $30,000, and in 2008, I believe it was, or maybe it was 2007, consigned it back to our auction, and we ended up getting a little over $500,000 for it.
Oh,
now, that's a world record for any type of... Was that an American piece, I'm assuming?
An American piece, yeah. That was at the height of the market, and it was a great piece, and a confluence of many events came together. It was a masterpiece by Frederick Reed, who I often call the Forrest Gump of American art pottery. He worked in England, and he came to America and worked at a bunch of companies, both large and small, and then ended up at Homer Laughlin, where he designed Fiesta ware. Yeah, I know, it's something, isn't it? Frederick Reed's done a lot of stuff, but this happened to be a piece that he did himself at a small studio in the artist colony that was Santa Barbara in 1915. It was a masterpiece.
Mm. Wow. And is someone able to see that online, like for our listeners?
Absolutely. In fact, all of our catalogs are posted online. People can for free do a search and see 10,000-20,000 pieces with price results and full descriptions.
That's it.
Which is another important point. We're big on describing the condition of stuff. A lot of our clients aren't looking at the pieces in person.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The downside is if a piece has a hairline crack, you're describing a hairline crack. The upside is they're confident when they buy from us, if we say a piece is perfect or the damage is minimal, they know what they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
So you do this with every piece you catalog?
Yes. Now, the ceramics are listed right in the catalog, because descriptions of damage tend to be fairly short. Small chip repair, 2-inch hairline, firing bruise at base.
Mm-hmm.
Furniture descriptions we post online for full reports.
Okay.
We just sold a pair of Robeson Giving chairs that had some issues, and online it says fair condition, frayed webbing, wear to fabric, fair vintage condition. We really get pretty specific about things.
That's good. I mean, you know, so many things are selling today online, whereas, you know, in the beginning people were very cautious about buying online. But I see more and more there's a building of confidence when you see, you know, for instance, Live Auctioneers is going strong, ArtFact is going strong. A lot of people are making a lot of sales online compared to what it was even 5 years ago.
Right.
It's still somewhat problematic because there are still issues with different computers and different platforms and different operating systems.
Mm-hmm.
We just had Live Auctioneers go down during our modern sale a couple weeks ago. Actually, through both sessions, the arts and crafts and modern session, went down for a few hours.
Oh,
but
no.
They're responsible. You know, they're mm-hmm. upfront about it. When we were going through eBay, it was a nightmare.
Yes.
And one time, eBay went down for an entire day.
I remember that. I actually had an auction that day. I had an auction that day. Yes.
There were over 30 auctions that day.
Yeah.
We were far from the only one. And eBay sent out a letter after the auction, because there were, as you can imagine, a lot of complaints.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
And they said that the problems were with the auctioneers, their systems went down. They took no responsibility for it to go back on us.
Yeah.
Wow.
We don't need them anyway.
Well, I mean, I got to tell you, there's been a fall off since we stopped using eBay. Instead of having 1,000 or 2,000 people at least registering online, now we have an average of 400 to 600 people.
Oh, really?
Okay, so it did get the word out there. On the other hand, they were not able to service the business they were driving to the site.
Mm-hmm.
What I found, and tell me if this is the same with you, but I found that the people that are signing in to Live Auctioneers and Artifact and all that, they're the more serious people. It seems like the bidding is not that far off online as it was, even though there's less people involved. What do you think about that?
Well, the gap is narrowed. I can't argue with that. I mean, we've been doing online auctions for a long time. Remember Amazon Live Auctions back in the 90s?
Oh, my, yes.
Okay, you come here with your yellow shirts, said Amazon, they were nice people, but there'd be a 15, 20-second gap between the bid and what was registered online.
Oh,
we've
wow.
been doing the online auctions for a long time.
And then iCollector, right?
iCollector, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think we've worked with four or five different companies at this point,
mm-hmm.
and it's certainly gotten a lot better. The difference in time is much better than it was, but we still experience problems so much that, especially for an expensive lot, if someone's interested, I recommend that they watch it live on the computer and bid live on the phone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. that's probably the safest bet. Well, I mean, the very safest bet is to be there, but, you know,
right.
But phone is about the second best. I agree with you there.
Mm-hmm. Now, David, you guys have, you know, you're so well respected in the industry, and you have so many great eyes and great experts, and you come out with two magazines regularly.
Right. The first one's about 24 years old now. It's called Style 1900. It's mm-hmm. dealing with art before World War I, mostly mm-hmm. arts and crafts, but some art nouveau.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is Modernism Magazine, which is 13 years old, and that deals with post-World War I.
Where are those two magazines published?
They're published here in Lambertville, and they're available by subscription and on newsstands across the country. Obviously, they're not big titles, and we have a fairly resilient and dedicated reading base, but they're quarterly magazines, and people seem to like them.
Yeah. Now, you're an author of around five books as well?
I think I've got six books out there, and I write a lot of articles. I mean, I'm an English lit major, so writing was something that I was always comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And how long ago, I've seen you on the roadshow for quite a while. How long have you been on that?
14 years.
Oh, my goodness. Is it the very beginning?
Since the first year. Yeah, my hair was darker and I had a ponytail.
Oh, it's happening to all of us. Don't worry.
Well, I wanted to ask something else about the magazines. So the staff for the magazines, is there a lot of overlap with your auction house staff and your magazine staff?
No, they're totally different staffs. Mm-hmm. They're in a different building here in town.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just bouncing around a little bit, what would you say has happened to Art Deco? Because I know you used to deal in that as well.
That's a good question.
Yeah, the truth of the matter is that I'm not an expert in Deco, and I can talk to you about Deco ceramics more than the furniture, but that seems to be a resilient market as well, especially for the high end. I mean, Jacques Roulon,
yep.
You can call him Deco, is stronger than ever. And Edgar Brandt and the leading exponents of Deco design, I don't think that's ever going to go away.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's such a cool, unique, era of design, really. But now let's get back to contemporary and the modern designer. Like I heard you say at the beginning of this podcast that pieces that are made today are actually highly collectible. So what can you just give a couple of examples? What would be a good auction piece of something that's made today?
Well, first of all, Ron Arad, some of his furniture, especially the one-off designs, are extremely popular, very valuable. We're starting to sell things by Mira Nakashima, George's daughter. She's
really? I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's And the thing is, these are not inexpensive when made now. To make something of that quality level is quite costly. So the secondary market tends to see a little bit of a dip. We saw a lot of Wendell Castle and Albert Paley, obviously two major designers who are still alive and well and working and making beautiful things. And we'll sell something of Mr. Paley's or Mr. Castle's from the 90s or early millennium, and sometimes we get more than they get for the new, and sometimes we get less. But they have people recognize good design. The biggest change I've seen is that Americans, whether because they're smarter or paying more attention or they hire designers or decorators who are trained to do this, are much more design conscious than I've ever seen them.
What about the good old-fashioned antiques? Does your company deal in that at all?
We have a number of different types of auctions here. We have an estate auction division that sells traditional antiques, jewelry, silver, furniture, folk art, whatever falls into those vast category of traditional antiques. And the truth of the matter is, it may not be a young demographic that's buying it, but they're very supportive of it. We got an estate here last year, the Stanley Estate, a pretty famous local estate that had been closed since 84 when one of the two partners died. And no one had been in the house for all intents and purposes for 25 years.
Nice. Time capsule.
It was a time capsule. It reminded me of Great Expectations. And so we got in there, and 25 years later, when the surviving partner had died, the family brought us in, and it was untouched. So we brought out a traditional house mansion full of mostly English antiques, and the competition was fierce. Carved wooden tea caddies, brass candlesticks, very hotly contested.
Yep. You know, a lot of times what I hear when I have someone bring a consignment to me, or I'm looking at an estate, most time people are saying, when it comes to traditional antiques, my children want nothing to do with this, or my grandchildren want nothing to do with this. Do you hear the same thing on the East Coast?
No question about it. That's what I'm saying. The demographic is certainly older. But moneyed, educated, dedicated. You put up a great piece of folk art right now, I don't think you're going to see much of a fall off.
Sure.
My wife and I went to the Winter Antique Show at the Armory last week, and I don't know if you go there. It's the number one antique show in America. Gene Petra's booth. Amazing stuff.
Yeah.
So you've got the traditional antique sales, you've got the arts and crafts sales, the modern sales. What else are we missing here?
Fine art. One of our special pieces, post-war contemporary art. We have a young star in fine arts, Meredith Hilferty, who's the director here of especially post-war art. She's got a fantastic eye and a great grasp of the field. We've sold two major collections here. We sold the most recently the Fried collection of very edgy art from the 80s to early 2000s.
You know, Dave, it sounds like you have a lot of auctions. And what type of, well, do you have like 20 a year or something like that?
I thought it was 12 a year.
Altogether, I'm thinking we probably hold about 18 auction sessions a year. There may be, for example, a fine arts weekend, and one day will be traditional art like Bucks County Impressionism, and the second day will be post-war contemporary art. We have the 20th century weekend is really two different sales, a day of arts and crafts and a day of modern. So I think altogether, in terms of sessions, we're probably closer to 20 sessions of auctions.
Okay.
What kind of staff do you have to carry auctions like that?
The staff here is about 30 people.
Yeah. Wow, that's a lot. Now, what about your space itself? What can you tell us about that, where you hold your auctions?
Well, the main space is a converted 1929 silk hosiery mill.
Oh.
And it's a great space. It's green girders and red bricks and a big clear story of windows. It used to be a factory. And people like being in here. It's got a nice feeling to it. If you're going to sit here for 5 or 6 hours, you don't want to be looking at plasterboard and fluorescent lights.
Right.
What's very cool about it is we've been here in snowstorms, in torrential downpours, and the light that comes streaming through here from all sides is natural. And you can watch the weather change, a flock of geese fly by. It's pretty cool.
Wow. It's nice to have natural light. And that's a ground floor level?
It's ground floor level. The clear story is two floors high. It's right in the middle of the building.
You know, my father and I looked at buildings like that years ago for an auction gallery back in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and every place had constraints, like beams coming down where, you know, people be missing bids and things like that. Do you have a wide open space in this building?
The center is wide open.
Nice.
It's about 4,000 square feet of one long channel that's about 30 feet high.
Plenty of room for people to sit and bid. Yeah.
Absolutely.
How many bodies do you get in on average for an auction?
Well, the most we get is around 400 people.
Okay.
Uh-huh. The average auction is probably about 150, but we'll have a discovery sale here in 2 weeks, which is we do these three times a year. It's a low-end blowout sale. This one's 2 days, 1,300 lots, six of which have reserves. The rest are just going to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get 400 people in this room from start to finish.
Now, mm-hmm. when you have a situation like that, do you not put it online, or is that online as well?
The discovery sales have just print catalogs, pictures online. The rest of the catologs are with full descriptions and color pictures of each lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. an interesting way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Where do you think the future is going in the auction business?
I think people are increasingly comfortable with the process. I hear less that I've never been to an auction and I'm scared of them. I don't hear as much of that.
Right.
And our own approach to auctions is, I like to say we're halfway between New York and Philadelphia. So we're sort of in the country, but we're close to major cities, and I was trained by a Sotheby's auctioneer. So mm-hmm. we run a semi-formal auction, but we're not in New York. We are in the country, so we try to blend the two.
Mm-hmm.
And that style seems to make people feel comfortable, like they're buying from folks who are kind of like them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that, this is a question I've never even asked anyone, but do you think that there's people that are joining online and bidding online that have never been to a live auction?
I'd have to imagine there are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have to imagine there are, but I'm guessing it's not the majority of them.
Right, right. The information you can put online today is so much better than it ever was before as far as the nice digital pictures. You say you have a really nice lot. How many pictures of that lot would you post?
More and more. Used to be we'd just put one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now, especially for an important lot, we may have 10, 15 photographs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I like the photograph damage.
Yes.
Because what do you mean by scuffing on the leg? Well, I can give you three pages on that, but I can show you the picture. You know,
right.
Right. Yeah.
And it's really we're all about repeat business.
Mm-hmm.
You can't please everybody, but the more they can see before the auction what it is they're buying, the fewer problems we have after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Now I'm out in California, and we see a lot of fakes of different things. Does that happen back on the East Coast as well? And I'm talking about paintings and you name it, anything that sells for money. You know, you have to keep your eyes open constantly. And I'm sure that's probably the same back there.
Absolutely, the more it's worth, the more fakes you're going to see.
Mm-hmm.
But we're part of the new trend of auctions, which really is not such a new trend anymore. It started 25 years ago, but when instead of auctions being run by generalists.
Mm-hmm.
For example, there'd be a really nice Skinner sale that would have Victorian arts and crafts, Art Nouveau, folk art, everything mixed into one sale. You can't know all that.
Sure.
But what happened in the early 80s is a handful of auctioneers started holding specialty auctions, focusing on what they do best. And suddenly experts are running the auctions. And we've seen an upgrade of all auctions, whether general sales or not, where the quality of expertise, level of expertise has risen. Has a fake gotten through here? Sure, it happens.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll sell 12,000, 13,000 pieces a year.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
maybe two or three of them are not what we thought they were.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You guys are so...
Mm-hmm. We take them back and we refund the money.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You're so well known for modern furniture and modern art and 20th century and contemporary pieces. You must have a really young clientele.
Especially for modern, we do, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Demographic is probably a good generation, full generation younger than for arts and crafts, and certainly not for traditional antiques.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And although your clientele is so young, and your auction is probably, you know, the first auction house that they're going to be really affiliated or they're really going to patronize, do you find that they're very informed and you have a very, you know, knowledgeable young clientele?
Pretty cool, actually. Right? a fair level of self-assuredness,
uh-huh.
and we may or may not be the first auction they've gone to, but
mm-hmm.
I don't see a lot of trepidation. What I see is the client base we have for modern, in spite of their youth, seems to be very familiar with the process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you think, would you attribute the success of your business in dealing with specialty sales?
Certainly,
mm-hmm.
certainly, because people have a lot more confidence if, for example, if I'm selling a piece of Frederick Reed pottery, and they want to know, well, how does this one rate? How does this stack up against the other pieces that Reed's done? Well, I've seen a thousand pieces of Reed's work, either pieces he did himself or pieces he designed and oversaw, and I know where that particular piece fits within the whole realm of his work. Mm-hmm. And also, they know that I make as much business telling somebody not to buy a piece as suggesting they do buy it.
Sure.
Because they remember that next time.
That's right.
You talk somebody off a piece because you know it's not for them, they know you're watching out for them.
That's right. Yep, I agree with that. Now, where would someone find you? Can you go ahead and give out your website address, if you would, please?
The main website is ragoarts.com. That's ragoarts.com. And that's a full-service website. There's a lot of information there. If they just want to browse and see what things look like and what they sell for and how to describe, as I said, probably 20,000 objects on that site at this point, maybe more.
Uh-huh.
And then our regular mail address for people still using such things, 333 North Main Street in Lambertville, New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
08530. That's where this very sweet period silk hosiery mill is located.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, when's your
phone number? 609-397-9374.
Great.
When's your next big sale coming up?
Well, we have this big blowout discovery sale in 2 weeks, and then we have that's early February. Then we have a large estate sale in March, mm-hmm. and then the modern and early 20th century sale in April.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to digress just 1 second because I thought of this a while back. Now, who are your consigners when it comes to arts and crafts? Are they from, or consigners in general? I mean, you're talking about old collectors, the demographics being older. So when you get a consignment, is it in a state of a collector, generally speaking?
I'd say the majority of the consignments that come in for arts and crafts are pieces that are already known and that come from people who've collected either entirely arts and crafts or at least partially arts and crafts.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I just got a collection of ceramics from a collector I've known since the early 70s,
mm-hmm.
and it was only 10 lots, and that was a fraction of what he had, but that's what pertained to the arts and crafts sale.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what about your modern consignments? Is that also young? Or
a lot of our modern consignments are for people who bought the pieces new.
Mm-hmm.
So I just got a consignment of Nakashima, George Nakashima furniture, from a woman whose husband was the Nakashima family doctor in the late 50s.
Wow.
You know, when I first came to California only 7 years ago, I never paid attention to modern, I'll be upfront with you. The first home I walked into of any merit, that's all I had. It had the Nakashima plank furniture throughout the house. And I thought, oh, this is kind of cool stuff. I had no idea what it was.
It's out there for sure.
Yeah. Yep. And the woman was telling me that there was a Civil War bullet in this plank. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I can't really remember for sure. But she said that he used to pick his lumber very carefully to make his slab pieces out of. It's pretty interesting.
I believe that.
Well, David, that was all very interesting. And thank you so much. We really enjoyed this today.
And thank you for having me on your show. Anytime at all.
Thank you. It was so informative.
All right, David, you take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot. Bye now.
All right. Bye-bye now. Well, that was the David Rago out in Lambertville, New Jersey. Very interesting. And this is Martin Willis.
And Phyllis Gall.
Signing
off.